Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Good afternoon, and thanks so much for tuning in to Nation Radio. Over the next 2 hours, we have a very interesting show for you. You're going to look at World Juniors prospects, tonight's Battle of Alberta, and that crazy transaction yesterday that Toronto Maple Leafs fans feel is going to change the world for them. This means championships are coming post-haste. So we'll try to poke a hole in that and do our absolute best to update you on exactly what's going on with Oilers and Flames and Leafs and the other Canadian NHL teams. Last night, Oilers had a Jekyll and Hyde week with a poor showing against Carolina, followed by a wonderful effort last night against Colorado. Everything rhymed last night. From moving Sam Gagner to the RNH Eberle line to the third line, I thought Belanger, Eager, and Jones did a lot of heavy-duty work last night. Got a goal and looked, really, really strong in their game. The Smith-Horkoff-Hemsky line was in and out, but they faced that O'Reilly-Landeskog line, who have been doing a lot of very good work on their end for the Avalanche as well. Notice Ryan Whitney is coming along slowly, but you know what? Remember a few weeks ago we talked to Jeff Crichel on Nation Radio about athletes and how they return from injury and what a process it is. And there it seems like there's a lot of tentative play there from Whitney. It also seems like he doesn't have his foot speed yet. So that's going to be a process, much like what we saw with Sam Gagner. And a very important part of the Edmonton Oilers because Ryan Whitney is a big part of the club. So hopefully he'll get his timing back over the next few weeks, and that's something to look for tonight again with the second of back-to-back games. Jordan Eberle leads the league in 5x5 points per 60 minutes. That measurement is available at Gabe Desjardins Behind the Net and is worth a visit. Great sight, great stat, and he is smoking at even strength this year. He's also tied for 8th in overall scoring. Nugent Hopkins is 5th. He's in a fifth-place tie in total points for the season, tied for 2nd in power play points. That's ridiculous for a rookie. Outstanding. He was double-shifted. We'll talk about that today, too, by Tom Rennie. He was double-shifted 1st and 2nd power play last night and looked dangerous all night long. Nikolai Habibulin tied for 4th in save percentage at .932. And with Devan Dubnyk struggling a little bit, it's good to see and probably necessary for the Oilers, likely to start him. We'll find out a little bit later on if Habibulin will start or Dubnyk tonight, but this might be the first in a while of back-to-backs for Nikolai Habibulin. Interesting on the broadcast last night, if you were watching TSN, Ray Ferraro mentioned that he thought the Oilers might want to consider keeping Gagner among the top six forwards when Taylor Hall returns. He said that Alex Hemsky's play was so sluggish during the last couple of games that the third line might be an option for 83, which, you know, when you think about it, since he came up, and that's a decade now, Alex Hemsky has always been, even as a rookie, he was playing with skilled guys, maybe not the kind of minutes that he sees now. But that to me is a sign of two things. Number one, Hemsky in a contract year and coming off injury, he really wants to be in a better place than he is right now. So one imagines he'll play a lot harder. And it also goes to speaks to the depth that the Oilers have now up front with all those high draft picks, RNH and Hall, obviously, but Jordan Eberle coming through. Sam Gagner was a 6th overall pick. A lot of talent there. And for them to even consider Alex Hemsky, and I'm not suggesting the Oilers are, but just kind of riffing off the Ferraro comment, that's an interesting insight. And I thought, he's a former NHL player, very insightful guy. Miss him on the Rogers broadcast. And a guy who I thought came up with a very interesting point. Maybe that's an option. Maybe the Oilers can go 3 scoring lines deep. When was the last time they had that kind of depth? It's been a while. One of the things that I think the Oilers could do is cobble together once Hall comes back, and then with Omark, if they could come up with 3 scoring lines and then what we always used to call an energy line, 4th line, which, you know, Ben Eager, maybe Pajarvi, something along those lines. But if Belanger is a key player, I think, because he's got enough skill to score 40 points in the National Hockey League. He's done it, you know, fairly consistently. So if they have 3 centers in RNH, Horkoff, and Belanger, along with the wings, which might be Hall, Eberle, Hemsky, Smith, and then Gagner with Pajarvi, Omar, Kartikainen, whoever you want to throw in there. Do they have that kind of depth? Is that something we can see in the second half of the year? Don't know, but it's interesting, and it certainly would free up one of those lines to play against very soft opposition over the next, 35 to 40 games as the season continues. RNH placed on both power play units last night. That's incredible for a rookie. It looked dangerous. dangerous all night long. And I wanted to draw your attention today to an article Terry Jones wrote in the Edmonton Sun. You can go online and just check it out, because he wrote some really nice information. He's been calling, Terry has, for Nugent Hopkins to play more minutes. And certainly he got that kind of playing time last night. In fact, in the first and second period, he was playing heavy minutes, and then they backed off a little bit in the third period with the game out of reach and, you know, maybe saving a little bit of energy for tonight's game. So it was a very interesting game. It was very frustrating to be an Oilers fan this week because of the Carolina effort and the games that have been lost recently, either in overtime or in regulation time. And you can see the team just kind of sliding back in the standings. Last night seemed to be a real statement. The kids played very well. Habib Bulin was good. The defense was good enough. And you know what? It was interesting. As a matter of fact, Tom Rennie had some very interesting comments after the game, and let's hear those.
Well, after the last couple games, I guess we could have to make some improvement.
Yeah, it was a good improvement. Better effort, and you know, just some more commitment, bigger commitment to the little things that we have to do to manage our way through a game.
Did you get any complaints from Nuge on his 6.5 minutes of power play time?
No.
Can you talk about...
He was good with that.
Can you talk about using the emotion?
Well, the big thing is, you know, trying to take advantage of a, you know, pretty talented kid and you know, give both units the opportunity to move pucks through him and see if we can find some success with two units clicking. And you know, certainly we've had one and going, and it seems to be his. The big thing was making sure that we didn't, you know, spend him too much. We are playing back-to-back here, and he's fine.
Look at Sam's first goal. Is that just kind of a perfect example of the things he's been doing? Goals haven't necessarily been going in.
Yeah, I think that's right on. I think that you know, he's been willing to muck it up and, you know, put in the second and third effort. And as a team, I think one of the reasons we've struggled here the last little while anyway is that we've been okay with the first effort. But you can't be a, you know, you can't be a first effort team. You got to be a second and third effort team. And Sam's been that one guy, or at least one of a few anyway, that's willing to put in that second and third effort when things don't, you know, aren't as crisp and clean as you want. And you know, that's how you make the difference in a hockey game.
Ben Ager seemed charged up again to be on the third line. It looked like your biggest challenge, at least in the first 2 periods, was finding ice time for him with the power play situation.
Right, exactly, and yet he, you know, he stayed locked in, which was important. Sometimes you can kind of get distracted by that, and lose your grasp of the game, you know, anyway. And certainly he didn't, and I think he felt he knew that I was coming to him, and you know, that's a good feeling for a player. Of course, it's all about confidence, and you know, having the trust of the guy behind you.
How significant of an evening is this in Nugent Hopkins' career for you heading in that direction with ice time and power play?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It's I'd like not to have to play him on both units, quite honestly. But he's a heck, you know, he's a pretty good player. I just found that out. You know, but I'd like someone else to be able to do similar to him. But he's just so good, you know. And but we have to be smart about it too, Terry. I think we've got to be careful we don't you know, overdo with him. We are again playing back to back, for example. We might have to find another way of going about our business tomorrow night with another unit, but. You know, one thing we do know is it works.
Well, can you just talk about maybe regardless of who you put, with Nugent Hopkins and Everly, it just seems to work out. All play well with Smith, Gagne tonight.
Yeah, you know, I think that's fair. I'm not sure how to answer that exactly because I haven't played everybody yet, but you know, they seem to have success. There's no question about that. I think that one of the things what I'm thinking about is just to be cautious, because as maybe they get out against heavier lines, you know, lines that maybe try to intimidate them out of a game or whatever, that, you know, the other winger might look a little different. They might not even be together. You know, who knows? It's fun to embrace all of this and feel really good about those two in combination with whomever and maybe a trio. You know, you saw another good combination tonight, you know, so, you know, we just have to wait and see you know, manufacture wins by trying to be allow our players to be players to be familiar with each other, but at the same time, do the right thing to, you know, to protect the line or protect kids or, you know, get wins in different ways.
Tom, could you comment a little bit on Nick's performance himself when he had to be tonight, and maybe would
would you consider starting him again tomorrow and coming right back to him?
I'll start with the latter. I will consider it, but I'm going to have a conversation with him, obviously, and see how he's feeling and what he thinks. It might take until tomorrow morning to know that, quite honestly. I thought he was good. I thought he was square. I thought he was dialed in. I didn't see a whole lot of second and third chances and scrambles and things where he really had to physically battle, you know, to stop pucks. And that's good for him, of course, and says something about our team. But also, we finally took advantage of a team that had played last night and went after them too. And I don't think that they had as much mustard tonight as they might have had in, you know, against Calgary or Vancouver, for that matter.
Do you think your players sense that a little bit? They saw a push towards the end of the second period, maybe they gain a little separation and further deflate that?
No, I don't think so. I think we're just trying to play a brand of hockey that is in keeping with what we want to be. We just had finally had enough. You know, and as sort of as a coach, you can ask me all kinds of questions every day after losses or whatever, but you get that sense that morning when you come to the rink, you get the sense where, okay, finally, they're sick and tired of this too, and they're going to do something about it. And that's really the feeling we had this morning, that they'd had enough.
When you took that time out, did you see a sign of them doing what they've done at that stage and all these other games where they've had the leads, or were you just reminding them?
No, I was when I took the time out, we were tired. We'd spent too much time in the defensive zone and off the ice. They're pretty good in the face-off circle. And off of an icing call, we just needed to rest our guys and just get it out.
Coach, how do you avoid, I don't want to say that you need Wednesday for tonight to happen, but how do you avoid that happening again in order to get back to this?
Yeah, well, I think we've got something to build on tonight now. We've got a more recent reference point other than our first 14 games finally. You know, so now we can kind of look at tonight as a semblance at least of what we're capable of. We have to demand that out of each other, that's how we come to the rink tomorrow to play Calgary. And, we've got to try to suppress these teams that are at least below us, as tight as it might be still. Every time you have that opportunity, you got to try to push teams down, that should serve as motivation, because there is a playoff spot at stake here, and we want to make sure that we're in the running for that. Okay, you're welcome.
It's Tom Rennie from last night's media scrum, just talking a little bit about the Oilers and how well they played last night, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins obviously having a huge impact on the power play, and as a matter of fact, he's tied for second in power play points so far this year in the entire National Hockey League. It's an interesting thing, because after 30 games, that's the game number 30 tonight, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is probably the best rookie the Oilers have seen. I'm going to say Jason Arnott, who had a big rookie year. Yari Kurri had a big one as well. But this might be, I think the record is Yari Kurri at 73 points for the Edmonton Oilers. And for this kid to be at 32 points after 30 games, if he stays healthy, the Edmonton Oilers record book is pretty darn difficult to rewrite. And it looks like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins might, do some things right out of the chute that have never been done before in the history of the franchise. And when you're talking about the Edmonton Oilers, that's a pretty impressive history. So, interesting stuff there from Tom Rennie. Interesting guest today, too. We got Ryan Lambert from Two Line Pass. Ryan will join us to talk about, he sort of made some news this week in regard to Alexander Ovechkin and something that he heard and then wrote and then did a few radio hits with, and some interesting things there. Also, Sidney Crosby and the Calgary Flames. We'll talk to Ryan a little bit later on. Danny Gray from Leafs Nation will break down the sale of the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment and how that will impact television in this country, not maybe in the next couple of years, but moving forward. And we'll have Kent Wilson from Flames Nation as well. We'll break down the Battle of Alberta. I'm pleased to be joined right now by a gentleman who we last had on a few weeks ago, talking about the Oilers and their draft. And, of course, we had him on as part of the draft coverage as well. Welcome to the studio, Matt Bug.
Thanks a lot, Alan.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Now, you're on Dauber Hockey. Where else can people read you?
I'm also a Western Hockey League scout for McKean's Hockey.
Okay.
They recently released their December rankings.
Okay, so we'll look forward to that, too, because there's a few questions I have. We're going to go all over the place, and I hope you don't mind, but there's a few people who have texted questions and emailed in questions. One from Cameron. He said, Galchenyuk was talked about as a likely top five pick in next year's entry draft until he suffered a knee injury. What are the chances that he slips down to Oiler country, which we perceive to be 10 to 15 somewhere in there?
I think there's an excellent chance that Galchenyuk slips. Whenever you consider a knee injury like that, you have to also factor in rehab there. So this is a player that may not necessarily be ready for when even camp opens in the fall. Having said that, Galchenyuk's strength was his hockey sense and his smarts. He's not a player that really benefited from having strong skating or poor skating one way or the other.
Right.
And you know, it comes down to rehab time for a player like that, but I think he'd be a safe pick anywhere in that 8 to 15 range.
From somebody who I usually start following the draft now as we head into the World Juniors, my perception of the draft in the summertime and leading into the fall for 2012 was there's a couple of high-end Russians and then a bunch of CHL defensemen, and that was about it. Now, can you fill in the blanks? Is that basically what it looks like still?
And that's basically what it looks like now. It has changed slightly because of all the injuries to the class all the way across the board. It's one of the oddest years I've ever seen that way. We're seeing high picks, mid picks, low picks. They're all either out for the season, out for months, out for weeks at a time. It's really rough. But as you say, there are two Russians at the top of the class, Neil Yakupov and Mikhail Grigorenko. A Swede has emerged, Philippe Forsberg. He's compared to Gabriel Landeskog. A couple scouts outside of McKean's have compared him to Brendan Shanahan. And all the way down from there is defenseman coming from the WHL, from the OHL, even a couple Quebec League defenseman in Junior A.
Let's talk about some of the WHL defensemen, because we're somewhat familiar because of the Griffin Reinhardt plays for the Oil Kings, and we don't see the kids out you know, farther out west, but we hear about them a lot. Mm-hmm. How do they stack up? I know I've been following a little bit some of the online stuff from Craig Button and some others. So how do you break them down? Because you've got some good defensive defensemen. Reinhardt would basically fit that. Then you've got Dumba down the road, who's, you know, this guy's a freak of nature. So,
yeah, riverboat gambler.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So how would you break those down for somebody who's just kind of getting into this year as far as the draft is concerned?
Well, as you pointed out off the top, Griffin Reinhardt, 6'4", 208 pounds. The kid is a physical beast. He's got 5 points in his last three games. He's a notorious slow starter, but lately has been a really key piece, as Oil Kings fans will know. Then you go to Ryan Murray, who's just got into his first action last night. He had an assist and was a minus one. He was coming off a sprained ankle. He had about a month and a half off from that. They were really careful with that. They wanted to make sure that he was okay. Morgan Riley was ranked number 5 by McKean's heading into this month. He's done for the year with a knee injury. A great offensive defenseman. He had 18 points through 17 games. Probably was going to lead all dub defensemen in scoring. Derek Pouliot, who's sort of that middle-of-the-road player. He was a former high Bantam draft pick. He's now 4 points shy of his entire output for last season. He's got 8 points in his last six. He's a two-way defenseman, a real good skater, really smart player. And then, as you point out, Matt Dumba, who is, he's so fun to watch. I don't know how much fun I'd have coaching him,
right,
but he is a tremendous, tremendous talent. There's no doubt about that.
Is he the kind of guy who you could see, and we don't, it doesn't happen so much anymore because these kids are scouted so heavily and coached in a certain way, but is he a guy who might end up being more of a forward type, or is he definitely got the defensive, you know, chops to be able to play at a higher level?
He does have the chops when he does want to use them. I know that that's a direction that Red Deer has really pushed him in this year, learning how to use his reach and using his speed and using his hockey sense to really break down plays. But when you watch him play, it's hard not to compare him to someone like PK Subban, who I think is a perfect example of his game. He pinches up, he rushes the puck, and he's got better hands than a lot of forwards in this class.
Is he, because Subban is a, like, you know, you said beast about Reinhardt. Subban is a, like, he's not only highly skilled and great, great stick, but he also has, you know, he's a physical player. He's kind of, you know, I mean, I know he's PO'd a lot of Bruins, and that's, you know, that's a good thing for Montreal fans. Obviously, he's already a folk hero in Montreal. Dumba doesn't have that kind of physical style.
Again, he's the type, when he wants to make an impact that way, he will.
Okay.
I remember watching a hit of his from, I want to say it was the TELUS Championship or one of the minor league championships, where he just throttled the guy, and that set the tone for the game right off the top. He's got 37 penalty minutes this season, a lot of them coming honestly. He's so, you know, you never really know which Matt Dumba you're going to get on any given night. You're going to get this freight train player who wants the puck, who wants to score, who wants to make a difference, and that he can make a difference in so many different ways, regardless of how he does it, I think is going to be a huge, huge draw for teams.
Okay. So if we're looking at the group that you've just talked about, those are the high-end guys, and we sort of were, anybody who follows the draft, familiar with most of those names.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's coming up now as a dark horse, or maybe we weren't aware of as the fall began, but is really starting to have an impact?
Well, Slater Kukuk for the Peterborough Petes in the Ontario Hockey League is starting to come on. He's got a dislocated shoulder, so he's out for an undetermined amount of time at this point. It might even be this season, but they're watching him very closely. But he's been their best defenseman, so again, they really want to make sure that can he come back and can he make an impact if he does come back? He's a very strong two-way defenseman, was easily the team's best player, as I said. And the injury is going to affect his draft stock, but that's a player who, if a team feels they've seen him enough and knows enough about him would make a really solid top 15 choice.
Okay. How many draft eligibles will we see at the World Juniors from the list that you've talked about?
From the list that we've talked about, we'll probably see Matt Dumba in sort of an extra player role. I know that Team Canada is really stressing this year breaking in younger kids so that they have that consistency in future seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Murray is a possibility, depending on whether or not he's physically capable come camp time, whether or not his conditioning is back on track. For other countries, it's going to be very interesting World Juniors that way. I know that Sweden is going to be breaking in some younger forwards, which they don't typically do, but they're going to have to this year if they want to contend.
Okay. And this is sort of off the topic, and just to finish up, any Oiler prospects who, and I'm thinking about Gernad because I saw him the other night before he got injured, and he was far more physical than I thought. Actually, he made I won't call it a dirty hit, but it was a very physical hit, and he got a penalty for it. But he's lanky. I knew that. I knew he was skilled, but there's a little bit of a physical specimen there too.
There sure is, and that's something that he's starting to come into as he adds pounds to his frame at this point. He was rail thin, as you know, coming into this season.
Yeah.
And he's starting to figure out that he can make a difference that way, too. He knew right off the top, very early on in the season, that he could score from anywhere that he was. And he's got such a terrific release for a defenseman. But, yeah, he's starting to become sort of that complete package, and it's looking like a real home run shot.
Beautiful. Any other Oilers out there that have made news or impact or that you've followed or read about that are improving year to year?
Well, Frans Tuohima in Finland is really making a big difference for his SM Liiga team. He's really emerged as one of the better starting goaltenders in Finland, and that's another great choice. He was a later pick. He's 20 years old right now. Not as big as a lot of Finnish goaltenders that you see break in, but his positioning is just faultless.
Perfect. Okay, so that's interesting because the Oilers, over a period of years, have drafted a lot of goaltenders. Dubnyk, the most famous because he was a first-round pick, but with Frédéric Chabot being such a part of that now, that's really had to, it just seems to me as though the Oilers have a plan. So it's nice to see some results.
Well, and you talk about that, and a lot of goaltenders that you see get drafted are very toolsy. They're very projectable. Samu Perhonen is an example of that, being a 6'3", 195-pound goaltender. And his positioning isn't great right now. They're starting to coach him into sort of the mold, and he's really helped with that. But you also have to look the other way at kids that you know can play a structured game at this point and just need a little more physical development.
Right, okay. Matt, thanks for this. Appreciate it. Where can people read you again?
They can read me on dobberhockey.com. I just had an article this past week on a dark horse Swede named Max Lander,
mm-hmm.
and also on McKean's Hockey, which just released their December rankings for the 2012 draft.
And your Twitter is?
Matt Bug.
Matt Bug.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to remember. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Alan.
That's Matt Bug, of course, from Dobber Hockey, and we had him by at the draft. He did some great stuff, and we'll have him on a few times here as the winter rolls along and we get ready for the 2012 draft. Now, Corey Graham will join us in hour number two, talk about Gernat and the other Oil Kings. Man, they're having a good run. Kent Wilson in hour two as well. We'll talk to Danny Gray from Leafs Nation at about quarter two or so. But up next, Ryan Lambert, and stay tuned for that. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:29. Oilers in action. Battle of Alberta in Calgary tonight. That's the second game of Hockey Night in Canada's tripleheader. Montreal ahead of New Jersey right now. A little bit of time left in the second period. 1-0 on a goal by Max Pacioretty. Vancouver plays at Ottawa at 5 o'clock our time today. Also Winnipeg at Detroit at 5. Boston Columbus should be interesting. And San Jose St. Louis as well. Those are early games. And then the later game, Edmonton Calgary, of course, and Dallas LA should be interesting too. So a pretty full afternoon and evening of hockey. And as well, of course, we'll be talking to Corey Graham in hour number two. Edmonton Oil Kings in action. What a team they are this year. First in their conference right now in the WHL. They're a fun team to watch. I caught them the other night, and they played the Calgary game when they were playing the Hitmen. And, man, they are interesting, fun team to watch. And I think they're going to catch fire because the team is first in the conference right now. Everybody's talking about them, and we need more fans of the game. We'll talk to Corey about that. But, man, that's an interesting story that I think people are going to be. In the second half of the year after Christmas, everybody's going to get pumped for the Edmonton Oil Kings. Could be a very long run into the playoffs. And who knows? You know, once you get in there against some of those other teams, Edmonton Oil Kings could make a A lot of noise here coming in the spring. Speaking of lots of noise, I'm pleased to welcome to our show today Ryan Lambert, who's been all over the internets with funny stories and interesting items. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Well, you know, I got to first of all talk about this Alexander Ovechkin thing, because Diggity sent in an email here about an hour ago. So I'm gonna ask you this question, okay? Do you or Ryan, this is me and you, have any rationale as to why there hasn't been a hearing regarding Ovechkin and his spear on Chris Neal? If there was ever an intent to injure, Ovechkin, in my opinion, does so with that spear. I know there's been no disciplinary action. That came out shortly after the play. What's your feeling on that Ovechkin play?
I mean, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that there are problems with the NHL supplementary discipline system. Like, they missed that hit by, Bourdon on Nate Gerby the other day. There was no hearing on that. It's just one of those things where, you know, they're not going to get everything, and certainly Ovechkin probably pled it, you know, could plead the case that it was just part of his normal skating stride. And again, we have to be realistic to where, you know, Alex Ovechkin, regardless of his production, is a star in the league, and stars are always going to get preferential treatment. So, I mean, how many times did Ovechkin, you know, go knee-to-knee with people and stuff like that and never get anything? So it's just one of those things where second it happened, you had to go. He's not going to get any kind of discipline out of that.
No. You made a little bit of news with Ovechkin and some reports on the internet and some steroid talk, too. Tell me, walk me through that, would you?
Sure. I think it was last Saturday or Sunday, this guy who writes a column in, like, a couple of newspapers around Pittsburgh wrote a column saying, hey, you know, Alex Ovechkin's not doing really well this year, and could it be steroids? I think so. And he had, a lot of very specious facts about, saying he was connected to a doctor that who got busted for trying to bring steroids across the border, who Ovechkin was, like, not connected to in any way. Like, there weren't even, like, rumors about it, really. And this guy just said concrete, right down the middle, he was connected to this guy. So I called him out on a column I write every week for Puck Daddy, and he was upset, so I had to go on his radio show, and he yelled at me for 25 minutes.
I heard the interview, and what I find interesting was he never really got – he said a lot of things, but he never really got – I didn't think he made a conclusive point about anything that he had said, having anything factual behind it. Did I miss something, or did he just yell at you for 25 minutes?
No, he would argue that he doesn't need to prove the facts. I believe what he said was the facts don't matter, or something along those lines. Just basically saying, like, it's his opinion, and his opinion is that Alex Ovechkin did steroids, and it's, like, up to someone to prove to him that he didn't, basically.
So sort of a prove a negative sort of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So now, out of that, were you the one that started the rumor that Sidney Crosby is a vampire?
Well, along the same lines, I said, you know, if you can just say that the burden of proof is on Alex Ovechkin to prove, or anybody, I guess, to prove that Ovechkin isn't on steroids, prove to me that Sidney Crosby's not a vampire. It's an equally ridiculous thing to say, in my opinion, without any evidence at all. So if he wants to just start throwing around accusations like that, you know, prove to me that Sidney Crosby doesn't feast on the blood of the living.
Well, it was one of the more entertaining things that I read this week, so I wanted to draw attention to it. Before we get to the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers and the Battle of Alberta, it's been an interesting couple of weeks for the Flames. They've added Blake Como for basically nothing, and it's not like they're in a hot streak, but the Flames look like they're turning things around. Aginla certainly had a good game the other night. There was a gorgeous pass to Jokinen for a big goal. Is this the beginning of that period of time where Oiler fans have to endure the Flames' annual hot streak that gets them close to the playoffs?
Well, I mean, maybe, you know, because you never know with a team like Calgary where they're all like in their mid-30s or whatever. But at the same time, they did it last year, and they certainly haven't really changed up the personnel too much. So I don't think that they're incapable of going on a hot run. Well, any team, I guess, in the league could do it. But I don't know. I just the key is getting close to the playoffs, like you said, instead of, you know, actually making it. And I don't think anybody has anything to worry about on that front.
So for the Flames, I always wonder about, and I've talked to Kent Wilson about this at length, but I always wonder about, you know, you're in that horrible spot the Oilers were in for so many years where you're 8th to 10th, and sometimes you get in and often you don't. And, you know, you've got Aginla, who's getting a little older, Kiprasov already offloaded Regier. Feaster says he's not going to rebuild, and we understand that, and they do have some talents like Berchi. Is this a season where the Flames are once again going to go through the trade deadline without offloading one of those high-priced veterans in order to gain younger assets and draft picks?
I mean, that's every indication the organization has given that they think Aginla, you know, even at 34 years old or whatever he is, 33, 34, they think he's part of the solution. And, I mean, I understand from a monetary perspective what Aginla brings to the team, and the owner is certainly, and it's going to be a tough sell offloading, you know, your most popular player in maybe franchise history, or like in Kiprasov's case, you know, a former Vezina winner who got them to the Stanley Cup Finals 7 years ago. Like, I think that there's just that romance of the 2004 season that everybody holds on to, that, you know, without kind of acknowledging everybody's 7 years older now than they were at the time.
Right.
And I think that's the only issue, that they still believe those players are the players they were 5-7 years ago.
Yeah, I think for Oiler fans, we're just waiting for this team to die. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but it's like 2003-04 was a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like they've been sputtering and trying. And, you know, the Oiler fans are used to that, because, you know, that was the Waite, Smith, Guerin era where you were always trying to get into eighth place. But with the cupboard being, from what we can tell, somewhat bare, are the Flames really in danger if they continue along this road of, you know, having a forced rebuild, much like what happened to the Oilers during the 2009-10 season, where they ended up obviously going to be a picking one or two?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, how long are you going to hold on to a bunch of guys in their mid to late 30s at this point? You know, how long are you going to sit there and go, we didn't make the playoffs this year, but we were so close, so let's keep the same team and go at it again? Like, they should have started the rebuild 2 years ago or whatever. I mean, they just haven't managed personnel well. They haven't recognized the shortcomings of the organization, and it's just one of those things where if they don't do it soon, they're going to be one of the teams that's finishing, you know, 14th, 15th in the conference for the next 6 or 7 years.
I always felt that Matt Stajan was a player who could be useful because of, you know, some two-way ability. He's cold again, 0 points in his last six games. Is he absolutely, I know he's not tradable, but is he a guy that there's no hope for, or is there any hope that he's going to turn it around and become the player that maybe when they signed the contract they hoped he'd be?
I can't imagine a scenario in which that happens. I mean, how many years of him being completely ineffective do you need before you just say, well, that's the end of that? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just, he's done so little. And even when he's looked, you know, good production-wise, I don't think that anybody would sit there and say that he's had a run of like 5 or 6 really good games worthy of that contract that he's put together since he came to Calgary, not even since signing that contract. So I don't know. I think it's a lost cause.
One thing that I've noticed about the Flames since the Blake Como acquisition is that, that they've got enough good players, you know, Morrison, Stempniak, Aginla, Jokinen, Bork, Lenkross, Como, that they can come at you a little bit in waves and then have that fourth line energy line. Is the depth better now for the Flames than it has been in some times? Because that's what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the Como acquisition because he's what, like an early 20s guy? He scored a bunch of goals last year, and it like you said, it cost him nothing. You know, it just cost him the money of picking up his contract. So I think that, you know, he was not maybe in the best situation. He was off to a slow start on the island, and just, you know, having the ability to come to Calgary and help out without being so much the guy. I mean, there's obviously the Islanders have like Tavares and Molson and all that, but Como, you know, was kind of maybe asked to do more than he is capable of,
mm-hmm.
a little bit, I think. And, you know, so having the ability to kind of fade into the background to an extent has helped him and obviously Calgary itself.
So final question for you. You are a blogger, sure. and Jay Feaster, yep. has you know, kind of called out bloggers as guys in the basement in their underwear. Do you have a basement and do you own underwear?
I do own underwear.
Okay.
I live on the third floor though, so I don't. Okay. I have like closets.
So you're not the gaunch blogger then?
No, I'm not. I'm not. I don't live at my parents' house or anything like that.
Okay.
So unfortunately, I hate to bust up the stereotypes.
Okay. Do you have your own bank account and keys to?
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. I just needed to check on that because we're trying
that's totally fair.
Okay, because we're trying to, you know, we're just trying to help Jay Feaster here, really, you know. So
yeah, well, you got to separate the wheat from chaff. I understand.
Ryan, thanks for this so much, and we'll have you back. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Ryan Lambert from Puck Daddy and Flames Nation. Interesting guy. And if you haven't read the whole fiasco about what happened with Ovechkin and the calling out and all of that stuff, it is on Puck Daddy, and it's fascinating stuff because there's no no evidence at all. But that's how it rolls. Anyway, that was fun. We're going to have a lot more happening here before 2 o'clock today. We're going to talk to Kent Wilson in hour number 2 about the Battle of Alberta. Also, Corey Graham about those Edmonton Oil Kings. Wow, they are on fire. And up next, Danny Gray from Leafs Nation. We'll get an update on that crazy deal that went down and how it'll impact how. I'm just hoping that there's more Leafs coverage for everybody. That's the key. This is Nation Radio presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
12:48, the Habs up on New Jersey 1-0 on a Pacioretty goal. We'll keep you updated on that. Of course, they're a very busy slate. Hockey Night in Canada has a couple of games, including the Oilers in Calgary against the Flames, and that's the late game, so we'll check that out. This has not actually come down yet, but Terry Jones is tweeting that the 10 games for Sutton, and it's been not yet confirmed by the NHL, not official, unconfirmed, but that's coming from Terry Jones. We'll keep you updated on that as well this afternoon. Now joined by Danny Gray from Leafs Nation. Danny, how are you this afternoon?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Good. I guess you're going to wait for the next ownership changeover to get involved in any kind of ownership with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is that correct?
Well, I'm actually a little bit disappointed because in my time when I'm not blogging, I'm actually a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping to be a member of the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan.
Oh.
And I just graduated from Teachers College about a year and a half ago, and I'm just doing some supply work right now, and I was looking to get in on it and be part owner of the lease, and then they go and sell it. So maybe I'll have to get a job with Bell or Rogers or something.
Wow. So you know what? That sucks because you did all that hard work, and now, you know, really for nothing. You know.
I know. I'm extremely disillusioned. It really had nothing to do with the children. I just wanted to own a bit of my favorite team. So.
Okay, I will confess to knowing very little about business, but it seems to me as though a couple of guys who hate each other ordinarily and their sides came together on a deal because it was just too darn attractive to pass.
Yeah, I think that's basically my one of my initial reactions on Twitter was that it says a lot about the profitability of MLSE if Bell and Rogers can get together on this and work together and buy something like that the same, right? They're basically, like they said, they're buying the content and they have the vehicles to give us that content. And the Maple Leaf brand itself, as well as the Raptors and TFC and all that, is extremely profitable content. It hasn't been the highest quality as far as the games themselves lately, but people tune in no matter what. So I think that's definitely a good business investment for them.
For the average Joe, and you know, what we need is more Leafs coverage in this country. But for the average Joe, what is going to change in the next two or three years? Anything at all?
As far as right now, the one major change is that as far as AM radio listeners go, AM 640 in Toronto had had the Leafs contract and they had been doing all 82 games. Going forward, TSN and the Fan are going to be splitting those up. The Rogers Center, or Rogers Radio and TSN are going to be splitting them, so they each get half of the games. They haven't said which half and who gets what, but that's the one biggest change, I think, as far as access goes. Leafs TV still remains. My thought is that we might see some TSN guys or some Rogers guys show up on Leafs TV. Right now, Joe Bowen does call the games on Leafs TV, and he also works with Rogers, so that should be the biggest difference. But other than that, I don't think anything major. The Hockey Night in Canada contract comes up in 2014, so it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen there. I mean, Bell and Rogers were obviously going to bid regardless, but now that they're co-owners of the Maple Leafs, I think that makes it even more of an investment for them to want to get a piece of that.
I'll tell you, I'm okay with everything, but if I start hearing James Duffy say holy Mackinac, then there's going to be trouble from this end. One of the first thoughts I had was that, you know, we've heard rumors for several years now that Hockey Night in Canada's, you know, monopoly on that Saturday night gig might be going the way of the dodo bird. Could this possibly be the first step in that process?
Well, I'm not much of an expert on this sort of thing, so anything that I'm saying is purely speculative. But I think that, as we saw with TSN, even sort of the buying of the Hockey Night in Canada theme, it's been sort of, you know, that CBC can't really afford to compete with CTV and Bell and Rogers as far as monetarily goes, and they've been really benefiting from the monopoly on Hockey Night in Canada. So with the contract coming up in 2014 and with the Conservative government sort of tightening the purse strings around CBC, I see it being very difficult for them to actually put out the money necessary to keep that contract. So it'll be something to keep an eye on. But I think that if Bell or Rogers does buy it, it'll still be sort of the same idea, access. Maybe we'll see it on CTV or something like that. It'll still be national with access for everyone, right?
Okay. Final question. And then we'll move on to some Leafs things that are happening. With regard to the Leafs and Leafs Nation and Hockey Night in Canada and TSN and all of that stuff, are there any thoughts that one of these two sides is stronger than the other in leverage? By that I mean Rogers and TSN or Rogers and Bell?
My own thinking is I see Bell being a little bit stronger as far as they have the national network already,
right.
With CTV being something that everyone can get even on the analog right now, obviously, but it's a full national network, and they've done a really good job with the Olympics as well, so they have that experience bringing the sports to a larger viewership. And again, TSN, I think, is a bit stronger of a brand, so it'll be interesting to see them go at each other. And I think that's the one major thing coming up is the Hockey Night in Canada. They're both going to want to bid independent of their Leafs ownership, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Okay, now let's get on to the Leafs. MacArthur and Armstrong are back. So is this a team that's pretty much healthy now?
Yeah, I mean, their forward core is healthy, except Matthew Lombardi remains out. But generally speaking, everyone up front is finally healthy, which is nice. But the one big absence, and I never thought I would say this, is Mike Komisarek still remains out with an injury probably until mid to late January. And a year ago, it wouldn't have bothered me. But right now, actually, he's someone who we could probably use on the blue line, which is a little disappointing.
This is an aside, and I didn't plan on asking that, but you brought up Komisarek. And one of my theories on all these defensemen who signed big contracts or move to one, from one team to another, often there's a period of time where it might be 20 games or 40 where you're adjusting, and then there's a lot of injuries to those types of players because they block shots and they're very physical. Is Komisarek was there an injury, or was there something that we weren't told about or wasn't highly publicized that may have impacted Komisarek's putrid play up until this year?
Well, there's obviously the incident with Milan Lucic when he was still a member of the Habs. He suffered a shoulder injury,
yep.
And a lot of people have said he wasn't the same since that incident, and his confidence definitely took a hit when he first arrived to Toronto with all the expectations, and he really did struggle. But the first 20 or so games of the season that he was involved in, he was playing really well for the Leafs. He was a steady influence on the blue line, and especially at a time when Luke Shen was struggling, it was a good to have him out there. But aside from that, that might be the only sort of remaining injury that I can think of. The Lucic incident and then the fight and that sort of thing afterwards. They had that sort of rivalry going. But other than that, it's mostly been a case of some bad luck. And again, he's not a guy who brings a lot of offense. So when he's not keeping the puck out of the net, he's not really doing much else. So it's hard for him to sort of get himself out of the doghouse, especially with fans. Now, I'm not an insider, but from what I know, the guys who cover the team say that Komisarek is really well-liked. Ron Wilson really likes him. Everyone around the team likes him. He's a bit of a veteran presence. So I think having him around is definitely beneficial to this team, whether or not the on-ice results are there as far as points and, you know, those sorts of things.
This year when they traded for Cody Franson, I thought, man, they are going to have such a great lineup with Lyles and all of those guys, but Phaneuf will struggle, and there's no chance that Gardner makes the team now. These many games in, Phaneuf looks like he did in Calgary, and this Gardner kid is, I mean, he's all world. He's an outstanding young player.
Yeah, once or twice a game, you know, you see everyone saying, like, Jake Gardner is for real, and people are saying that the Leafs have sort of a you know, not a stud, but a legit defenseman on their hands here, and it sort of took everyone by surprise because, like you say, it was sort of a struggle for him to make it out of camp, especially with the team signing Cody Franzen. But, yeah, he's looked impressive night in and night out. I mean, he still makes a few mistakes. The other game against New Jersey, he coughed the puck up, which led to a 2-on-1 late in the game that Reimer had to bail him out. But other than that, every night he moves the puck well. He's got great hands. A lot of his play is really positional-based. He doesn't throw a lot of hits, but he's really good at separating the guy from the puck and using his stick and using his speed to move the puck up to the forwards. He is a little hesitant to shoot right now. He was on a 2-on-1 earlier with Tyler Bozak the last game against the Devils, and he elected to pass. And I think with a little bit more experience, a little bit more confidence, he takes that shot, and maybe it goes in.
The game last night, they lost 4-1. What was the major culprit there? I caught some of the game, and it looked to me like there was some power play action going on from the other side, and maybe Reimer wasn't as sharp as he needed to be. But what was your summation of the game last night, the 4-1 loss? Yeah.
It was definitely the special teams. They gave up 4 power play goals, and anytime you do that, as Ron Wilson said, and he added a few more curse words, but you're not going to win many games when you do that. So for the Leafs, the special teams have been killing them lately. The past 2 games, they've only allowed 1 goal at even strength, and that was a 4-on-4 overtime goal against the Devils, so it's not even really even strength. But besides that, they've let in 6 goals on the power play, so that's just not good enough.
Right.
Now, the Leafs normally don't take very many penalties, but over the last 10 games, they've actually given up 43 power play opportunities. And I've only had 31 for themselves. Since Ron Wilson's been coaching, they've actually had a differential of a positive 33. So that's something that I think will sort of even out. But definitely last night, the main problem was the penalty kill. It was pretty atrocious.
Okay. You know, and I let you go, but I wanted to ask you one final question, because the best article I saw on the internet was you this week about, and it's about that feeling you get when you think a goal is about to be scored.
Thank you.
Well, it was brilliant, because I've been watching hockey forever, and I've always had that feeling, but I could never articulate it. So tell me what made you think of it, and tell me about the article and what you came up with.
Well, actually, what made me think of it was the game when the Leafs were playing the Devils, and Carl Gunnarsson whiffed on a slap shot. And like you said, everyone gets that feeling when they're watching the game, and you just know what's about to happen. So in my spare time, a lot of the stuff that I like to read is sort of behavioral economics and sort of like pop psychology and neuroscience and that sort of things by authors much more capable than myself. So I sort of had been interested in that. Whenever I read these books, I always find myself thinking about the Leafs and hockey fandom and how really related they are. And like I said in the article, it feels sometimes like we're lab rats, basically. You know, we're all sitting in front of this TV watching something that gives us a lot of pleasure, but we have no control over. So sort of the mechanics of our brain and the biases that are ingrained in our brains sort of explain some of the things that we go through when watching the game. So basically, if you watch enough hockey, you know, you get to recognize those things that obviously lead to a goal, whether it's a goaltender mishandling the puck or, you know, just one of those things that happens so often, a missed chance at one end leads to a goal at the other end. So when you see those sort of things happening, your brain is responding quicker than you can actually articulate it, like you say, and before you know it, the puck's in the other end of the net, and you're really angry, but you don't really know why.
Yeah, it's a brilliant article, and people should go online and read it. Speaking of which, where can we read you, Danny?
I'm on the Leafs Nation, which is theleafsnation.com, and I also do some writing for PPP, which is pensionplanpuppets.com. Since Bell has a pension share of the new Toronto Maple Leafs, we don't actually have to worry about renaming that blog, which is nice. And I'm also on Twitter. You can follow me, and my Twitter handle is a cat named Felix.
And that's after Potvin.
No, well, kind of, yeah. It's after Felix Potvin, and Plea from a Cat Named Virtue is a song by the Weakerthans, and they're one of my favorite bands, and they're a Canadian band from Winnipeg, so you should check them out as well.
I love I Hate Winnipeg. It's one of my favorite songs.
I think they should play it at Jets games.
I do, too, and it's not a negative, right?
No, definitely not.
I agree totally. You know?
Well, maybe we should start some sort of petition or something.
People should listen to us, Danny. We're smart.
I know. We've got the good ideas.
There you go. Danny, thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me. Have a good week.
Okay, you too. Danny Gray from Leafs Nation and Pension Plan Puppets, and an interesting guy. And read that article. It's brilliant. It really is. Okay, Dustin Nielsen tweets right now. Heard yesterday that Sutton was looking at 9 games. Number out there right now is 10, but no official word from the NHL. We'll keep you updated on that. We also have Kent Wilson, Corey Graham from the Oil Kings play-by-play. Talk about tonight's game and how well they're doing. And the return of Matt Bug. We're going to have him back on, talk a little bit about the World Juniors in hour number 2 as well. We're going to take a break right now. Stay tuned. We've got lots of good things happening. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
5 minutes after 1 o'clock, still awaiting the Sutton suspension. Have no word. There was a rumor from Terry Jones saying it was 10. That is not confirmed from the NHL or from the Oilers, so we'll keep you updated on that. This hour, I'll talk to Corey Graham from the Oil Kings about their incredible run in their game, and Matt Bug as well on the World Junior Championships, and we'll talk to Kent Wilson just around the corner. Couple of things to pass along. Ethan Morrow was placed on waivers by the Los Angeles Kings. That happened the other day. He is now cleared waivers. So I don't think he's coming back to the Oilers. But, you know, the Calgary Flames really like picking up guys who've been to several cities in very little time. So Kent Wilson joins us now from Flames Nation. Kent, any interest in Ethan Morrow?
Absolutely zero interest in Ethan Morrow. I'm stunned he didn't retire years ago.
Well, you know, you could move him in there and put Glenn Cross on the fourth line.
No, I think we won't do that.
Hey, Calgary's the only place in the world where Brendan Morrison can get hot, so I think you guys should consider it. You know, that's where everybody gets revived.
No, I don't think they should push their luck on that.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay. Yeah. Jordan Eberle quoted today saying, and I want you to hear this because I thought it was pretty funny, at our expense, Calgary is growing and getting better, and that pisses us off. You Flames people have made Jordan Eberle swear.
Well, I don't know if the Oilers are making the Flames better, but they certainly do improve our record a couple of times a year.
What is it about, and this happens in all sports, where one team just seems to have another team's number, and for years now, I remember there was a game maybe in the 2000-01 season where the Oilers had a nice run against the Flames, and Mark Savard scored, first game of the year, he scored a goal, and it was a 1-0 game for the Flames. And almost since then, and running over a decade now, the Flames just seem to have the Oilers' number.
Yeah, it was something that Daryl Sutter, when he joined the organization years ago, he really emphasized the fact that the Flames should do well in the Northwest, and specifically against a rival like the Oilers. And it's helped that Edmonton's been so poor for so many years. But that's sort of stuck with the team ever since.
The Flames are looking much better, and I know you and I have talked about Blake Comeau being a factor. What else has contributed to this? Because there's been injuries, and your best defenseman's gone down. Still, you know, in the last 10 games, there's some improvement, and it looks like the Flames are headed in the right direction. What are the factors?
Well, there's a couple of them. First, this is probably the softest portion of the schedule for the Flames all year. They've faced a lot of non-playoff teams, which has really helped. I mean, luckily they've played well against them and beat them. But I mean, when I talked about the December schedule a couple weeks ago on Flames Nation, I said if Calgary is going to make a run at the playoffs, it has to be now. Just looking at the quality of the competition they're facing. The other thing is Aginla and some of the frontline players are definitely finding their legs. It took him a couple of months to get back to speed, and even though he's not the player he was maybe 7 years ago, he's still an effective he can still be effective. And I think he's had, you know, 14 shots on that or something in the last two games. So,
well, he's really hot. Four points in the last two games.
Yeah.
As fans, we often underestimate, I know I do, the impact of injury. And Ginla had a slow start, you know, to training camp, and it was a process for him. Did we maybe forget about that, and now he's kind of, you know, showing us exactly the player he's always been?
I'm not so sure about the injury thing, because there have been long stretches in the last couple of seasons where Ginla just hasn't been a superstar for non-injury related reasons. I mean, there was the end of I think it was 09-10 or 09-10 where he just, the last 2 months, he just wasn't very good. The first two or three months last season, he wasn't very good. And there was no real injury reasons. He's 34, 35, going on 35 years old.
Yeah. One of the things that I find fascinating about the Flames is their consistent preference to go with old people. And Roman Harak, he's not Gretzky, but I thought he played pretty well. And what was the idea behind sending him down to Abbotsford?
I really just think it's just a full complement of players up front. David Moss is hurt, but he's coming back pretty soon. Brendan Morrison was a healthy scratch for a while, and then he came back in and scored, 6 points in the last two games. So now the coaching staff is going to take Morrison out. So they basically had to make a decision, and Horak was the easiest one just because he's a rookie, he has a two-way contract, and he's waiver exempt.
Okay, Cameron wanted to ask this question of you. Have you heard that the Flames are still looking to make a deal for Kyle Turris?
No, I mean, that was a rumor when Turris wasn't signing with Phoenix. He did sign. I think all of that stuff has sort of died down now. He's played five games with Phoenix, and it looks like they're determined for him to, you know, stick around for the length of his contract there.
For Oiler fans who haven't maybe seen Calgary in the last week or so, which of the lines are humming? Which lines should they watch out for tonight?
Well, the Ginla Jokinen line with Glenn Cross has looked pretty good. They're very good against in the last game. So I think Oiler fans should be aware of them. Actually, the Backlund line, which features Como now, they've been very good as a third line. They're all very fast. Stepniak's on that line as well. They're all very fast. They all can handle the puck. And so they've been spending a lot of time in the offensive zone.
And defensively, you know, we don't have to worry about Robin Regier anymore, but it doesn't seem like there's been a big gap in toughness. Maybe not the big time hits, but Flames still have plenty of toughness on that blue line.
Yeah, there's actually no really big hitters anymore. Corey Sarch, that's the one talent he still brings to the game, but the Flames are scratching him in favor of rookie Joe Piscola. So, I mean, nobody's overly soft except for maybe TJ Brody, just because he's, you know, 21 years old and not very big. And Jay Bouwmeester is known as soft, but he's actually been kind of mean the last few games. He was against the Oilers, at least.
Yeah, he was.
And, no one's hitting anyone in neutral zone like Dion Phaneuf was, and no one's crushing anyone behind the net like Regier was, but they're not overly soft either.
No, for sure. I never thought we'd start doing this when you and I would talk about the Flames, but it's almost like we have to start talking about the really good-looking prospects that the Flames have coming up. Let's start with Berchi. He's kicking ass in the WHL.
Yeah, it's completely foreign for Flames fans. We don't really know what to do with ourselves at this point. He's got, I think he's 54 points in 24 games now, which is probably the highest point per game pace in the CHL. It was last time I checked. So he's 19 years old. He's not overly big, but man, he's dangerous.
Yeah, he is. He's very skilled. And I remember watching him in the playoffs last year, and he's certainly fast enough. I don't think that's ever going to be an issue. Mm-hmm. But he can beat people, and he could last year, so he's obviously a lot better. Who else are the Flames have coming up that maybe would make an appearance at the World Juniors or that they can Flames fans can look forward to?
Well, they got actually a couple of American juniors. One named Bill Arnold, who's playing for Boston College this year. He's second on the team in scoring. He was sort of a third-round pick. for the Flames, and he's a bigger center. He's not tall, but he's solidly built, and he was picked sort of on his two-way play, but it sounds like his offense is starting to come around too, which would be nice. On the same team is a really little guy that they picked named John Gaudreau, I believe it's pronounced, and I think when they picked him, he was 140 pounds.
Wow.
That's how small he was, but he's a freshman on the club, and he's one of the highest scoring rookies in college hockey this year. So he was a sort of a long bomb swing for the fences pick by the Flames, and it seems to be working out.
And were these picks, help me with this because I can't remember, were these picks before or after the organizational guru was hired to bring in and improve the overall feel of the team?
Arnold was a couple of years ago, so he was under the old regime.
Okay.
Gaudreau was this summer.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. So interesting, obviously, I wanted to pass this along. I don't know if you know or not, but Thomas Kaberle has 2 assists in the game this afternoon. Can you talk to me about that? Because when it happened, I thought it's not exactly nothing for nothing, but it's as players, these two obviously have had much better years, and yet Spacek played very well in his debut, and now Kaberle, 2 points for the Habs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually looked at Kaberle earlier this week because there are people in Calgary suggesting they swap Stajan for Kaberle to get rid of Matt. And I looked at Kaberle's underlying numbers, and they are absolutely dreadful for Carolina this year. And I'm talking about even strength play. And I look back a few years in his history, and he's been playing some of the softest circumstances available. He was doing it in Toronto as well. So, I mean, he's a guy who's put up points in the past, but he's never been a great even strength defender. And in Carolina, he was still getting some of the best, easiest zone starts on the team, some of the softest opposition, and the puck still wasn't going the right way. So it's certainly not a bet I would make. I think today he's looking good because the Canadians have spent a lot of time on the power play, and that's probably where he's still a pretty functional player. But I'm guessing in any games where they don't spend 6-7 minutes with the man advantage, he's going to start looking not so good.
You know, Kent, thanks so much for this. Good luck tonight. And, you know, you made Jordan Eberle say a bad word.
I hope the Flames continue to do that.
Thanks, Kent.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay, that's Kent Wilson from Flames Nation. Interesting guy. Great stuff on Flames Nation all the time, and he writes for various other projects. You can check him out on Twitter as well and find all of his articles as he releases them throughout the week. Okay, we got a very busy show still to come. It's 1:17. Going to take a break. Before 2 o'clock today, Corey Graham, we're going to be talking to him about the Edmonton Oil Kings and their run, and first in the conference. We'll talk about that and the game tonight, and also Matt Bugg. We'll get a good look at the World Juniors and some of the players we can look forward to watching in both Calgary and Edmonton. Stay tuned for that. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
1:22, this is Nation Radio, and the Edmonton Oil Kings are first in their conference in the WHL. Man, are they a fun team to watch. Really entertaining. And every night they've got so many good hockey players, and they play a freewheeling style that, you know what? It's outstanding. I really enjoy going to the game. I think the Oil Kings are the best kept secret in town, and I can't wait for this city to notice it. I'm thinking that when the World Juniors happen, it's going to ignite a lot of fans. And then afterwards, after coming back from the break, people are going to realize that they're first in the conference, after 31 games, 20 wins, and playing outstanding hockey. Joined by play guy Corey Graham. Corey, how are you this afternoon?
Real good, Alan. How are you?
I'm very well. This team is, and I think it's been a slow build, right? Because the first couple of years, it was an expansion team, and you know, young men like Pisick and others were obviously outstanding to go watch. But you know, they had a strong following. But this year, this team is exploding because there's so many good players, and everybody's having a really good year.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, kind of watching this team grow over the last few years and really being around closely the last couple of years. And you know, last year they sort of scratched the surface of where they were getting to. And this year, like you mentioned, I mean, they've won 8 straight now and everybody's scoring goals. They've outscored teams 49-15 over the stretch. And it's fun hockey to watch. Like you said, everybody's going, everybody's putting the puck in the back of the net. So things are going well right now.
I watched the Calgary game and I was very impressed by Gernot. He's a gangly guy and he's he's rangy, and he can obviously do a lot of things offensively. But what I didn't notice early in the year that's coming along now is as a more physical player. Has he, you know, amped it up in that area?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, every once in a while before he'd throw a hit, but now he's battling a little bit more. I guess maybe getting more accustomed to the North American style of game where you're kind of in a battle everywhere on the ice. And, you know, a guy with that size and that frame, that's what everybody wants to see, right? Everybody wants to see you use your size. And I like the way he's starting to do it because, like you said, he's been great offensively so far. And it's nice to see him kind of round his game a little bit more into form.
And the other thing about the Oil Kings is that, you know, he was playing big minutes the night I saw him and now missed the couple games afterwards, and they don't seem to miss a beat. They have so much depth on the blue line.
Yeah, they have 8 defensemen now. They brought in Cody Corbett from Minnesota about 15 games ago or so, and he's really sort of added out and rounded out this group. You know, you look at it, they're going to be without Mark Pasek here for a while. Gernat's going to go to World Juniors as well, so they're going to be down 2 defensemen. Mason Gertzen is going to go to U-17, so they're going to have a few holes opening up. But like you said, they do have the depth coming in. You know, like I mentioned, Corbett, Ashton Sautner's really sort of taken that next step so far this year, and Ryan Deck, sort of that stay-at-home safe defenseman that can chip in as well. So I really like the way their depth is working out for them. I mean, obviously, you know, Keegan Lowe up there as well. But they have a lot of options right now. They can mix things up. And, you know, when Pesek's been out of the lineup, you've noticed it, but they haven't suffered as much as maybe years past.
Christian Pelz is a player who's really emerging. He leads the team in plus, minus, and plus 20. Scored a gorgeous goal the other night. Went shelf right in front of the net, point blank. 13 goals in 30 games, obviously heading for 25 or 30 this year. Tell me about his development.
Well, you mentioned his shot. I mean, Christians can shoot the puck better than anybody I think I've seen. Like, their wrist shot is unbelievable, how quickly he gets it away and how fast it is. You know, I don't know if goalies see it half the time when he shoots the puck, because it's amazing. And, you know, still kind of waiting for that time where he gets the feet and the hands right on the same page consistently. Because when he does, he's a scary player. But there's still some times where he'll be blown by a guy and it just seems like his hands don't catch up, or he gets the puck in a certain situation and his feet quite aren't where he wants them to be, and he has some struggles. But he's a real good offensive player. And you mentioned, I mean, plus 20, so he plays both ends of the ice. He's great on the penalty kill this year. He's been a mainstay on their first PK unit, which is, I believe, it's still ranked top in the league. If not, I'm just doing the prep right now, so we'll find out in a second. But it's right near the top of the league, so he's been a big part of that. And you know, he's starting to take that next step. You know, a guy that was a 7th-round pick of the Oilers a couple of years ago, and I think, you know, starting to show he's got that offense as well.
Let's talk about Curtis Lazar. This is a 95. I mean, he's a young guy, and he's got all-world skill.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I like about him most, Alan, is just you watch him play and you watch where he is position-wise, and, you know, he's always in the right spot. I mean, he's a kid that's not afraid to level a guy. He's back defensively. You know, coaches and scouts love this kid for that. You know, we can always look at numbers of certain guys, and you know, certain guys are just offensive guys that don't really play a full game, but Curtis is not that guy. He's in the right spot every time. I mean, he'll get blown up in the corner by a hit and come back to the bench laughing and said, "Oh yeah, he got me that time." He's got the perfect attitude to be a hockey player, and you know, he's going to go for play for that Team Pacific as well, and that'll be a big thing for him. And looking forward to his second half. I think, you know, offensively, he's got 9 goals so far this year, but there's obviously more there to come. And once he kind of gets into his groove in this league, I think he's going to be a dominant force.
The Oil Kings are plus 45 goals for against over a 31-game period, which is a very impressive number. First in the conference, is there any worry that when everybody breaks for the World Juniors that there'll be some difficulty getting it all back? Or is it just a matter of riding this thing and enjoying the good times?
Yeah, I think it's that old story is if you don't want to stop playing when things are going well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's amazing because every night it seems like, you know, if Michael St. Croix isn't going because he was going so well earlier, you know, TJ Foster will step up or Dylan Ruck. So, I mean, they got a lot of key guys on this team that aren't going to tournaments that are going to be relied upon. But, you know, they're going to be shorthanded here a little bit. You know, Pelch and Gernat both going to be gone. Mark Pesek, like we mentioned before, and Lazar, Gertzen, and even backup goaltender Tristan Jarry are all going to be gone at U-17. So, they're going to need some guys to step up, but they're getting healthy bodies back. Stefan Legault came back the other game, and, you know, he's had 4 points in the 2 games since he's been back. So it seems right now whatever they're doing is working. So, you know, eventually it's going to end, obviously, but I don't know when. It's just the way they're going right now. And like I said, they got the Christmas break coming up too. So I think they want to just play as much hockey as they can while everybody's going.
Now tonight's game, 7 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's PA who are at the bottom of the table of the conference right now with 21 points in 33 games. Tell me about that matchup, and could this be one of those blowouts that the Oil Kings have been somewhat famous for recently?
Well, I definitely it could be on paper. You never want to go into it, you know, obviously thinking that because you never know what's going to happen. But Prince Albert's a team that's really sort of struggled this year, you know. They're going to be without their best player tonight. Mark McNeil is going to be down in Calgary at that Canada camp as well. So that's a huge loss for them. He plays, gosh, Alan, I want to say he plays at near 30 minutes a night, it seems. He's all over the ice for them. And they're really a young team without him in the lineup. So I'm not sure what to expect out of them tonight, you know. They do have a couple guys that can score. I like Mike Winter. He's coming on, but he's a 17-year-old. It's sort of his second year in the league, sort of feeling his way in. Josh Morrissey's a pretty nice defenseman who's a 2013 pick coming up here in the draft. So he's still a ways away, but he's starting to find his stride. They do have a veteran guy like Kellen Toshkin, a signed player from the Vancouver Canucks. But really, outside of that, there's not a ton of guys that you would really notice on this team. You look at it tonight. Tonight's a very winnable game for the Edmonton Oil Kings, for sure.
For people going to the game tonight, the guy that I really tried to pick out, and I noticed that he's a big man, even though he's a kid. Griffin Reinhardt is 2012 eligible. For Oiler fans, he might be just in that area where they end up drafting. This guy is really a multidimensional talent, but he's a big physical player.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Griff's starting to, and I think he's starting to realize how big he is. You know, at times last year, there was points where he wouldn't hit a guy. He would just kind of push and shove a little bit. And we're kind of like, Griff, you know, you're big. Don't worry about it. You're going to take the guy out. And I think he's starting to realize that a little bit this year because he's upped his physical game as well. And he's become more of an aggressive offensive player lately as well. He's got a couple goals in his last few games, and he's got the big slap shot from the point. When he's on the power play, look out, because he can absolutely bomb it. And he's starting to really sort of take the reins offensively, lead the rush a little bit, and not look pass first all the time. So that's good to see, because he can move the puck very well. But when he starts to look to shoot, it's going to be scary. He's up to 6 goals now in 23 games from the back end. So looking more and more for him as he gets more and more comfortable at this level, for sure.
We're at Nation Radio, and we're talking to Corey Graham, of course, getting ready for tonight's game right here on Team 1260. Oil Kings playing host to Prince Albert. Looking at the Central Division, every time I look up, the Kootenay Ice seem to be winning, but they're coming back to the pack a little bit here. What's going on in Kootenay?
That's a good question, because you're right. They've lost a couple games here. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with them. They've lost 4 in a row now all of a sudden, and we haven't seen Kootenay for a while, so I like their team. Obviously, Nathan Lewin's a fantastic goaltender in the 20-year-old. I just wonder if maybe things are starting to even out a little bit for them. You know, you go on a run for a while, and then all of a sudden you fight some adversity. So, you know, they're sort of slipping here a little bit, which is, it's nice timing, I guess, for the Oil Kings. And the other team, which we really can't figure out, I mean, I know they had a lot of injuries, is the Red Deer Rebels. They've lost 12 straight games now, which is just incredible. I know, obviously, without Nugent Hopkins and Darcy Kemper, but they were off to a real good start early and all of a sudden can't seem to buy a win. They've lost to Swift Current, to PA. They lost 3 games to Lethbridge in a stretch, and they're really struggling. So it's kind of, you know, the Central Division, it's been pretty competitive all throughout the season, but you're starting to see some teams like Red Deer falling down. Calgary's playing better hockey. Medicine Hat's right in the mix, although you kind of wonder when they lose Tyler Bunns here and Emerson Edom to World Juniors, how they're going to stack up. So it should be an interesting little time here with players away.
The Tigers seem to be in some high-scoring games lately. I follow Bunns, obviously, because he's an all-star draft pick and a St. Albert kid. But is that a team that is more freewheeling than the button-down style that would obviously favor a goalie and his goals against average?
I think so, a little bit. I think they have to open it up to score goals. They obviously have the 2 big guys in Edom and Hunter Shinkarik, but outside of those 2 guys, it's a little bit of a struggle to score goals. So I think they have to open it up a wee bit more than they're more accustomed to try to get some goals. And Bunns, you know, he's a pretty steady goaltender, but there are some nights where he's not on his game. It doesn't happen all that often anymore. He's becoming more and more consistent, I think, at least at this level. But there are some times when you can get him moving side to side, and he sort of opens up the net. But I think definitely it's part of their style right now is where they got to try to they have to be in the track meet at times with teams to score some goals if their 2 guys aren't going, and then sort of rely on their goaltender the rest of the way.
What time do you hit the air tonight?
6:45 pregame.
Okay, and don't let Kent hog the microphone. He's been doing that a lot lately. I don't know whether you've noticed
that
or not.
He's the star. He's the star. I'm just along for the ride.
Hey, Corey, thanks, man.
All right, thanks, Alan.
All right. Corey Graham, play-by-play guy right here from Team 1260, Edmonton Oil Kings broadcasts. And this year, you want to check out the Edmonton Oil Kings live, but if you can't, tune in to the game because this is an exciting team and a lot of talent, a lot of offensive talent, terrific defense, and on some kind of roll as we get towards Christmas. It's 1:35. This is Nation Radio. Going to bring Matt Bug back from Dauber Hockey to talk about the World Junior Championships here in the next little while. I want to talk a little bit about what you're going to see in Edmonton. In Calgary, we're going to go through Team Canada, obviously, and possibly some of the players you're going to see as part of the starting lineup, USA and Sweden, if we get to them as well. So stay tuned for that. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1:40. We have 20 minutes left in the show. And don't forget the Oilers in action tonight. Hockey Night in Canada game. Oil Kings in action as well. Right here on Team 1260. Pregame at 6:45 with Corey Graham and Ken Simpson. Now joined by Matt Bug from Dauber Hockey. He was in earlier today. And we talked a little bit about, you know, Oiler prospects in the 2012 draft. Want to pay very close attention now to the World Junior Championships just around the corner. As a matter of fact, is camp tomorrow open for Team Canada in Calgary? I believe so.
I believe camp opens tomorrow, yes.
Okay, and we have had some news that Connolly from Tampa Bay and the big winger for from Anaheim.
Yeah, Devontae Smith-Pelly will be released, yeah.
And so that changes things because at least from my point of view, I think the Tampa Bay forward, Connolly, that was a little bit of a surprise that he got released.
It sure was. Even though he only has 4 goals and 8 points this season with the Lightning, with Martin St. Louis' injury, I would have thought for sure that Connolly would have been jumped up the lineup at least for a few games to play with Steve Stamkos. But Tampa has agreed to send him back, and I don't think he was necessarily ready regardless. But at this point of the season, yeah, it certainly is a surprise.
And Smith-Pelly is he's a man among boys. He's a bull in a china shop. This guy is huge and physical and punishing, and he'll have an impact in the World Juniors.
Well, and I know that Team Canada was calling almost every week to see if Pelly would be available for the tournament. So I don't imagine he'll be just in a bottom six role for the tournament. I think they're going to try and see how high they can play him, especially on a scoring line that may need a bit more of that grit.
One thing that I remember talking to Cam Moon about in the summer, and it seems ridiculous now, but he and I basically on the show agreed that there was a very good chance that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins would make the Oilers and would last past the 9 games. But the one thing he and I believe, agreed on was that he would definitely be loaned out for the World Juniors.
Absolutely. Well, and it seems, we were talking about this before, and it seems so ridiculous now to say that, but it's not a possibility at all at this point. The kid could come near to 80, 90 points this year. I don't want to say it, but maybe even 100. It's just amazing.
73 points, I believe, is the record, Yari Curry, for rookie scoring.
Rookie scoring. Okay.
For the Oilers. And like the Oilers are, like their record book is just full of Hall of Famers and impact players and ridiculous talents. And for him in year one to rewrite any portion of the record book is an amazing story. It really is.
Especially when you consider the physical package that he brings. This wasn't a player that we expected to come in to have the physical tools to do this.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So now with that said, Connolly and Smith-Pelly we've talked about, where does the offense come from Team Canada? Like, where are they going to get these slick power play points and snipers? What are their names? Because there's not a lot of returning juniors.
There sure aren't, and one of the things that I think Team Canada is going to look at doing this year is rolling a 1A and a 1B line. We'll probably see Jaden Schwartz as the premier asset on this team offensively. Mm-hmm. Ryan Strome and Brett Connolly are two other weapons. And on the second line, I really like what Team Canada has done this year in bringing in Tanner Pearson to at least have a shot in camp. I believe he's the CHL's leading scorer at this point, and he plays with Mark Scheifele and Barry. And that's not a player that they typically would have invited before because he's a 19-year-old, was passed over last year in the draft. But I think they're coming to realize that in a tournament like this, you really need to take advantage of previous chemistry. You can't go to these kids and say, here, you've got a week and a half, get used to each other. We're going to play in the biggest tournament in your age group in the world. And so maybe Pearson and Scheifele will make up a second line that could be very, very well on even strength, and especially on the power play where Pearson seems to thrive.
Strome is not having an outstanding season. Is he somewhat vulnerable with the returning of the two NHL players, or is he pretty much a lock?
I think they're going to experiment with him. He's just over a point a game now, which is, well, impressive, really isn't what we were expecting from a player that was taken so high and with his skill set. But because of that skill set, because of the craftiness that he possesses, he's a weapon that you can use, especially on the man advantage. So I think he'll get his cracks. There isn't really another center besides Scheifele in camp. Jonathan Huberdeau is a possibility, but he's battling a leg injury. They don't know if he's going to be ready at this point. So I think the door is wide open for Strom to come in.
So the other thing that we always look for in a Canadian team is you know, that grit, like a two-way kind of a guy, penalty killer, somebody who can provide some energy. Curtis Hamilton would be an example of a that type of player. Any of those types that we can look at maybe making this final team?
Well, beyond Smith-Pelly, we're probably going to see Zach Phillips on the club, regardless of whether or not Huberdeau is there or not. Phillips is one of the better two-way players in the CHL. We'll also see Brett Bulmer, who was playing some games with the Minnesota Wild this year and was really thriving in an agitator role. And Quinton Howden, who's a returnee, he's really, really developed that way in using his reach and his big man body to play a two-way game. So those players will probably make up a big portion of the Team Canada penalty kill.
Right. I just wanted to talk about, you mentioned Huberdeau. Apparently, this is from TSN, he will be able to take part in some, if not all, on-ice activities. Definitely going to be day-to-day, not sure, but somewhat encouraging news from that point of view.
Well, it really is, and he is such a big piece of this team, or was expected to be, because of the creativity and the abundance of skill that he has. And not to have him, as I said, you have to look at having Ryan Strome in your top six regardless of what happens.
What about every year when they bring the kids to camp, I always, you know, pay attention, obviously, because, you know, we live in the West, the Western League, and often it's OHA, then dub, and then Q. What about the breakdown this year? Is there a lot from one league as opposed to another league?
We're going to see a lot of WHL forwards, which is sort of unusual. We're going to see Connolly, who, of course, is a WHL grad but was in the NHL this year. We'll probably see Michael Ferland. We'll see Mark Stone from Brandon, Quinton Howden, Bulmer, of course, and through the defense. And that's sort of where it flips. Mark Pesek is one of the only defensemen, along with Alex Petrovic, who I think has a great shot of making this squad.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's going to be a fairly interesting mix of NHL talent, of college talent, of Quebec League talent. So it's a good mix this year.
So of these 17-year-olds that we've talked about defensively in the WHL, and you know, we talked about the kid in Red Deer and Griffin Reinhardt here and the Ryan Murray. Of that group, are all of them pretty much long shots?
I think Murray has to be considered just because of his intangibles. If it wasn't for the injury, I would say he was certainly a lock to be the taxi defenseman for this squad, just so they can acclimate him to next year when he would be a premier piece of the club. But with that in mind, I think we have to look at Matt Dumba as being the really odds-on favorite to join as the number seven defenseman, especially in games where the team feels they need some more punch on the power play if they find that the forward mix isn't working out. He's a player that can make a difference in that special teams time sheltered at even strength.
Because in the past, and I know it's, is it Kevin Prendergast's second year of doing this? I can't recall.
Second or third year.
Right. It seems as though they maybe cheated a little bit for the gumption as opposed to the skill. So maybe they would cheat on the other side this year with Dumba as an example.
I think so too, because they're starting to realize that they have all this talent in the CHL and in other areas, where in years before we were seeing players like Tyler Seguin who weren't making the team. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins didn't make the team last year. And so they need to start taking advantage of that and using those players in premier roles, because they are the best players in their respective leagues in this age group. Why not use them?
Right. In goaltending, is it Vizintin's job to lose and then Bunn's as somewhat of a favorite to back up? Or how does that play out?
I think that's absolutely right. We'll see Tyler Bunn's, again, getting a chance to get his feet wet at this level. He'll probably play a good portion of the games here in Edmonton. And after that, it'll be Vizintin show.
Okay. So now I know the pipeline guys have a contest. If you absolutely had to, we're in Vegas now, and I'm not that I would put money down, but we were talking and we wanted to make a bet about the starting lineup for Canada. If you had to name them now, would you be able to in your own mind's eye, be able to call that?
I think so. I think I've got a fairly strong idea of who this club is going to be based on some of the invites that they've already made and the players that they made sure that they got back from the NHL. So I think we'll see Schwartz on the team, Strome, Connolly, Pearson, Scheifele, Smith-Pelly, Ferland, Mark McNeil, who is away, of course, this evening, Mark Stone, Quinton Howden, Zach Phillips, Bulmer, Huberdeau, if he's healthy, on defense, Nathan Bolo, Dougie Hamilton, Pesek, Gormley, Jamie Oleksiak, Alex Petrovic, and the two goaltenders we talked about.
Right, okay. And we didn't mention Dougie Hamilton, which is ridiculous because he's, man, is he having a year, right?
He's outscoring some forwards in the OHL. Yeah. It's just incredible.
You know, that draft, I sat there and I was, that was so, I was, you know how you, as a fan, anyway, I am anyway, I'm watching Hamilton slide. And then I'm watching the kid Couturier slide, and I'm like, come on, Oilers, trade up
move
there.
Move up, do it.
You know, because a Dougie Hamilton would be just a beautiful addition to the rebuild that the Oilers have going on right now. So that's Team Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about the Americans, because from my point of view, I'm always interested in the Americans because they've replaced the Russians as the team that I love to hate at this tournament. But it's so hard to get a handle on them because they're you know, they're at Miami of Ohio and War Road High School and wherever they are. So it's very difficult to get an idea about where these kids are going to come from.
It sure is. And as you put, you know, this team is going to be looking at a very varied roster this year. Jason Zucker, Charlie Coyle, Brandon Saad from the OHL, Emerson Edom from the Dub, JT Miller, Nick Bukestad from the NCAA, and a couple other college players are probably going to be the core of that team. We'll probably see Jack Campbell be the starter again. I can't imagine a scenario in which he wouldn't be. But as you say, it's going to be another varied team. I wouldn't call them gold contenders right away, but as they've shown the last couple of years, they can be a spoiler team when they get those additional players, especially a player like Jason Zucker, who brings leadership. If he gets hot in this tournament, that's a dangerous player.
As long as Carlson can't be on the team, I feel really good about it. What about Zucker is a guy who is it Zucker's turn or Marinson's turn to wallop the other? I can't remember which one that is, but Zucker is an interesting player. The thing about the Americans is the last few years, and I'll go back to, say, Parise on, mm-hmm. they seem to have, you know, they've always kind of had the grit, but they didn't, the Canadians will bend but not break.
Right.
The Americans maybe had to learn that over a period of years, but the last few years, they really seem to be able to, if the talent level is similar, it's not a fait accompli that the Canadians are going to find a way to make it work over the Americans.
And this American team has learned that mental fortitude is the biggest thing that you can have in this tournament. To be able to either bounce back from losing a game or bounce back from being a couple goals back is huge. And that's why the Americans have fed on the Canucks the last couple of years, because they know that they're coming in as the underdogs. They have just as good of a shot, though, no matter what happens. The games have to be played. You can't look at paper and assume you're going to know what the result is going to be, and they've taken advantage of that.
Yeah. If there's a favorite in this World Juniors this year, and I think it's very fluid compared to previous years, who would you name as the favorite going in?
I think Team Russia has to be one that's watched very closely. You've got Evgeny Kuznetsov, you've got Vladislav Namestnikov, Mikhail Grigorenko, of course, Alexander Kokhlachev, Neil Yakupov. It's one of the deepest forward groups in the tournament. The issue is going to be on defense. They've only got two players who are already drafted. The rest of them are 2012 eligibles or have been passed over. And in goal, they've got three 2012 goaltenders in that group.
Okay.
If they can build up a reliable defensive unit, and that's going to come from coaching, which I understand they're very confident about, that's a very, very dangerous team.
What about Team Sweden this year?
Team Sweden, I mentioned in the first segment that we did that they're looking to some younger players. Sebastian Kolberg, Philippe Forsberg, and Pontus Åberg are three 2012 eligible forwards. On defense, they're going to be very strong, as they typically are in this tournament. Oscar Klefbom, an Oilers draft pick, and Jonas Brodin will be the top pairing. And in goal, they've got two typical Swedish goaltenders in Johan Gustafsson and Johan Mattsson. But beyond those three forwards and beyond someone like Mika Zibanejad, I don't think this is going to be a very dangerous roster offensively, and I don't know if they've got the firepower.
Okay. And is there because I'm Canadian, I cheer for Team Canada, but my honorary European Canadian team is Finland. But they are so hit and miss in these tournaments. How do they look this year?
They look very strong up front compared to other years where they were embracing sort of a Canadian style and playing a physical sort of two-way game. They realized that that was the way they had to play to contend. But this year they've got the Granlund brothers. They've got Detroit Red Wings pick Timo Pulkkinen. They have Nashville draft pick Mikko Salomaki and Buffalo Sabres first-rounder Joel Armia. So they're very, very strong there. The question marks, ironically, may come from whether or not this team has the physical grit to contend this year. But Alexander Sasha Barkov, I mentioned him earlier too, he's the youngest ever forward to play for Finland. He's about 6'2", 6'3", right now. He's 16 years old or so. Second line center in the Finnish Elite League at this point. And I think as he goes, so will this team. Even though he is so young, they're looking to him to do a lot this year.
So he's already better than Nina Maki, is what you're telling him. Nice. Hardest names to pronounce in the tournament.
I have to give that to Zemgus Gergensens from Latvia. They have a Roberts. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the last name. It's got like three J's in it. I would like to buy a vowel.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and it all gets underway on Boxing Day. And so you're thinking that the favorite to win it all is Russia?
I have to say, if they get the defense and the goaltending required, no one's going to stop that forward group. We saw last year that they can win games 6-5, 7-5, and they could do that again this year.
Matt Bug, thank you.
You're welcome.
Matt Bug from Dauber Hockey. You can catch him online, of course, and he's available at Twitter as well. We want to thank Ryan Lambert, Danny Gray, Kent Wilson dropped by again as well, and Corey Graham. Don't forget the Oil Kings game tonight. Pre-game at 6:45 with Kent and, of course, Corey. Look forward to it. I'm out of here. Enjoy your weekend. This is Nation Radio on Team 1260.